Imagine finding a business that, organically grows its profits by 25% every single year, just indefinitely.
Right, it's the absolute holy grail for anyone putting money into the market.
Exactly. We even have a name for it that gets spoken with this, almost deep religious reverence. We call it the compounder. And we treat it like a magical switch that a business either has perfectly flipped on or it completely lacks.
Well, the problem with that holy grail is that it is structurally almost impossible to find. I mean, the way we talk about compounding, this whole idea of a business reinvesting earnings at high rates forever,
Yeah.
it sounds like an immutable law of finance.
Yeah, like gravity or something.
Right. But relying on that definition actually blinds you to the brutal reality of how businesses survive, how they grow, and ultimately how they eventually decay.
Which is exactly why we're here. Welcome to this deep dive into the Infinite Investor, which is a foundational part of the broader Averaging Up collection. Our mission today is to completely deconstruct this cult of the compounder.
Yes, we are moving past the superficial labels.
Yeah.
We really want to look at the underlying physics of how capital actually flows through a business.
Because, as we are going to explore, compounding is not a toggle switch. It's a mathematical consequence of how a business handles its capital flow. So let's just dive right in.
Let's do it. To really dismantle this myth of the perfect compounder, we first have to look at the fundamental anatomy of every single business model. And I mean every business, whether you are running a corner bakery or a trillion-dollar tech giant, the architecture is the same.
Okay.
The framework we are using today divides every business into a flow of capital between two distinct reservoirs. Let's call them Reservoir A and Reservoir B.
Okay, I want to make this really tangible for you listening. So Reservoir A is what we call the toll. Think of this as the cash register today. It's the money a business collects right now from its existing operations.
Exactly. It is short-duration capital. It's cash in hand.
Right. And Reservoir B, on the other hand, is the wave. This is the capital being pushed out into the future. So research and development, the new factory being built, maybe the software being coded for next year. It's your long-duration capital. Cash for later.
And every business operates with a mix of both. They possess what the infinite investor calls a dual duration.
A dual duration rate.
Yeah, and the distinction between the toll and the wave is critical for one specific reason. Compounding only ever acts upon Reservoir B. It acts on that long duration wave.
Oh, that's a crucial point.
It is. The growth builds on itself over the years, whereas Reservoir A, the toll, is simply harvested in the present moment. So if a business is, say, 99% toll, it fundamentally has very little long-duration runway left to compound.
So the balance between these two reservoirs gives us our first real clue about the nature of a business. But, and I think this is where it gets fascinating, the static balance isn't what actually matters. It's the movement of cash between them.
Right. Which brings up the concept of capital absorption. The direction of the flow is everything. In a truly high-quality, sustainable business, Reservoir A absorbs Reservoir B.
Okay, break that down for us. What does that actually look like?
What that means is the toll generates more than enough cash to comfortably fund the wave. So the business takes in all the growth opportunities the market offers, it funds them entirely from its own current cash flow, and then whatever surplus is left over, it just overflows.
And that overflow is usually what gets returned to the owners, right? As dividends or stock buybacks.
Exactly.
The word absorption feels really deliberate there. It isn't just about aggregating mass. Business isn't a black hole just, destroying capital by throwing it at random projects.
No, not at all.
It is about incorporation. The toll takes in capital and actively converts it into a larger toll for tomorrow.
And we can actually map this directly onto the laws of physics, which I know that sounds like a bit of an academic stretch,
Yeah.
but the underlying mechanics are identical.
Okay, I'm with you.
Think about a core concept in thermodynamics: entropy. If you leave a machine alone, it rusts, right? It breaks down. Everything in the universe naturally drifts toward disorder and decay.
The second law of thermodynamics.
Sure.
And a business left to its own devices doesn't just stay the same. Competitors steal market share, consumer tastes change, equipment becomes obsolete. It naturally decays.
Which is exactly why the physicist Erwin Schrödinger's work is so relevant here.
Yeah.
Schrödinger pointed out that to survive, a living organism has to feed on what he called negative entropy.
Negative entropy.
Right? It has to constantly draw order and energy from its environment to hold off its own physical decay. And then Ilya Prigogine later expanded on this with the concept of open systems.
Right.
An open system maintains its internal structure only as long as it draws in more order from the outside than it dissipates.
Let me translate this into a biological analogy for you listening, because it makes the physics instantly click. Think about human metabolism. Just eating food, you know, just swallowing mass is not enough to keep you alive and healthy. Your body has to actively break down, absorb, and convert that energetic flow into cellular structure to stave off physical decay. And a business is exactly the same. It cannot just swallow capital or stockpile cash in a bank account. It must structurally incorporate that capital to fight off the flat equilibrium of zero returns.
That biological parallel holds up perfectly under mathematical scrutiny, too. When reservoir A successfully absorbs reservoir B, the structural integrity of the business compounds. It stays ahead of that natural drift toward exhaustion.
But just surviving isn't what investors are looking for, right? They are looking for growth.
Exactly. Which means we have to figure out how intensely a business can absorb that capital, because the intensity of the absorption dictates the speed of the compounding.
Right. And if we want to measure that intensity, we have to look at a pretty legendary metric in finance, the dollar test.
Warren Buffett really popularized this concept, and it provides a ruthless discipline. The theory is straightforward. A management team is only justified in retaining earnings, essentially keeping the owner's money, if every dollar they retain creates at least $1 of market value over time.
But there is a massive trap here that catches a lot of people out. The dollar test isn't about the return a business makes on the capital it already has. It is entirely about the incremental return.
That distinction is where almost all analytical errors happen. Let's say you were looking at a phenomenal business. It earns an incredible, say, 30% return on its existing historical capital. The toll is incredibly lucrative.
Sounds great so far.
Right. But when that business tries to expand and build a new factory or launch a new product line, it only earns an 8% return on that next dollar invested. The compounding of the business going forward lives entirely on that 8%. It doesn't matter how glorious the past was. Future compounding lives on the incremental.
And this reveals a hidden assumption built into the dollar test. It assumes the business actually has the ability to reinvest in size. I mean, the speed of compounding is just a math equation, right? The quantity of capital reinvested multiplied by the incremental return.
Exactly.
But the quantity a business can actually reinvest is dictated entirely by where it sits on the spectrum of absorption.
Let's break down the two extreme ends of that spectrum, because this completely shatters the idea of a single compounder label.
Okay.
On one end, you have weak absorption. The classic archetype for this in the averaging up framework is a business like See's Candies.
See's is legendary. It has an absolute fortress of a brand, incredible profit margins. It's universally praised as a great business.
The margins are phenomenal, yes.
Yeah.
But the internal growth engine is largely exhausted. The reality is, the market for premium box chocolates only grows so fast. You can't open 10,000 stores overnight. So, Reservoir A, the toll, is throwing off a mountain of cash, but there is almost no internal Reservoir B left to feed on. There are very few high-return projects left to actually fund.
So the business absorbs barely anything. It has weak absorption, and the result of that is massive overflow. The company generates all this cash, can't organically absorb it into internal growth, so it just hands it back to the owners.
Exactly.
So the compounding here is slow, and it's largely mechanical, executed by the parent company reallocating that cash or buying back shares.
Now contrast that weak absorption with the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Strong absorption. The archetype here is a capital-heavy railway network.
Okay, a railway is a completely different beast. In this scenario, the toll covers the growth, but the railway requires so much maintenance, new track, new rolling stock, it basically plows nearly all of its cash back into an endlessly expanding base.
Right. The railway takes the cash, its toll throws off, and absorbs almost everything.
Right.
Because it absorbs so intensely, there is very thin overflow left to hand back to the owners in the short term. But the structural compounding is fast. It is an exponential organic expansion of the asset base.
Wait, hold on. I need to challenge this because it feels counterintuitive to everything we are taught.
Okay, go for it.
If the railway is expanding its base exponentially and is this, you know, fast compounder, while a beloved wide moat brand like See's Candies is stuck with mechanical slow compounding, aren't we just supposed to buy the fastest compounder? Doesn't this framework imply we should all be buying railways instead of chocolate companies?
That assumption gets to the heart of the most critical insight in The Infinite Investor. Speed is, without a doubt, the most overrated dimension of compounding.
Really? really, why wouldn't I want the fastest growth possible?
Because compounding is an exponential function. And in exponential math, the ultimate value created is dictated far more by the duration of the compounding than by its short-term speed.
Oh, I see.
A business compounding at a steady, moderate 12% for 30 years will mathematically bury a business that compounds at 25% for 4 years and then just burns out.
So the highest speed carries the shortest certainty.
The absolute shortest.
Yeah.
That fast compounder, the intense reinvestor, is highly vulnerable. Its speed only lasts as long as its new growth continues to clear the cost of capital. And honestly, more importantly, it only lasts as long as its competitive moat holds up against rivals who want a piece of those high returns.
Right.
A moderate rate of return protected by an enduring, unbreachable barrier will almost always outrun a spectacular rate that inevitably fades.
Okay, so we've established how successful businesses operate when Reservoir A is comfortably absorbing Reservoir B. We have the slow, mechanical overflow of a See's Candies, and we have the intense base building of a railway. But what happens when the math goes backward?
When it goes backward.
Yeah, what happens when Reservoir B starts absorbing Reservoir A?
The averaging up collection refers to this specific state as the wager. This is a condition where the cost of future growth is so massive that the current toll cannot contain it.
Okay.
The reinvestment into Reservoir B consumes far more cash than the business actually earns from Reservoir A. So capital is hemorrhaging out much faster than it comes in.
From a pure physics standpoint, that is the definition of structural collapse. The organism is burning more energy than it consumes. It's the direction of ruin.
It guarantees financial ruin unless it is a highly calculated, deliberate wager. And the defining archetype for a successful wager is early Amazon.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that, because for years, critics screamed that Amazon was a giant Ponzi scheme that didn't make a profit.
Right. The critics were looking at the negative cash flow, but they fundamentally misunderstood the physics of what Jeff Bezos was doing. Amazon deliberately poured colossal amounts of external capital into building out a massive logistics infrastructure, an AWS that was a Reservoir B.
Yeah.
And the cost of building that wave was absolutely devouring the tiny retail toll they were generating at the time.
Wait, so just to be clear for you listening, early Amazon wasn't actually a compounder during those years in the traditional sense. They were essentially standing on the brink of ruin, playing a high-stakes game of chicken with the capital markets.
Structurally, they were operating in a state of decay. They were making a very specific existential wager on the direction of the flow. The bet was that the infrastructure they were frantically building would eventually become so dominant that it would generate a toll massive enough to reverse the flow of capital.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They were betting that eventually the toll would grow large enough to absorb the growth that had been absorbing it.
And when that reversal finally happened, when AWS and the fulfillment network started throwing off cash, it unleashed one of the greatest periods of wealth creation in modern history.
Exactly.
But the mechanism is what matters here. Most businesses that find themselves in the wager, where growth consumes everything and cash flow is deeply negative, they never achieve that magical reversal. The capital markets shut down, the funding dries up, and they bleed out.
Yes.
The rare, spectacular success of an Amazon is exactly why so many startups attempt that dangerous wager and why so many end in demise.
Which brings us to the reality of the market. Very few companies are See's Candies, and very few survive being early Amazon. The vast majority of modern corporate giants actually operate in what the collection calls the vast middle.
But we need to make a crucial distinction here. The vast middle isn't a fixed category, right? It's not a stagnant bucket you put a company in. It is a passage. Businesses constantly migrate back and forth along this axis as their dual durations rebalance.
Exactly. A company's position on the spectrum is entirely dictated by its current mix of short-duration toll and long-duration wave. As a business matures, that mix inevitably shifts.
Think about Berkshire Hathaway or Alphabet. These aren't static companies. They are archetypes of dual duration in motion.
Take Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett uses the established, highly profitable, short duration toll of his insurance premiums, you know, the float from Geico,
right,
to fund the aggressive acquisition of entirely new, capital-heavy, long-duration assets like energy infrastructure and railroads.
And Alphabet does the exact same thing in tech. They use the massive short-duration toll of Google search advertising to fund the long-duration wave of autonomous driving at Waymo or artificial intelligence at DeepMind.
And as one area of growth finally matures and turns into a reliable toll, the entire business naturally drifts toward the overflow end of the spectrum, cash piles up, but that management opens up a new frontier of long-duration growth, and they shift right back toward heavy reinvestment.
Yeah.
They're dynamic, living systems constantly rebalancing their absorption to stave off entropy.
So bringing this all together, if a business can fluidly move between these states, if it can navigate the vast middle, use its toll to fund its wave, and rebalance its durations, why is that original perfect compounder cliche we started the show with so incredibly rare?
Well, it comes down to the structural limitations of capital flow. There's a structural tension inherent in the universe of business that you simply cannot wish away.
The perfect compounder cliche demands three things simultaneously, doesn't it? A business that reinvests a very large quantity of capital at a very high incremental return for a very long duration.
High return, massive scale, enduring duration. It is an impossible triangle.
Let me map this onto a concept that might be painfully relatable for you. If you've ever worked in project management, or I don't know, if you've ever hired a contractor to renovate your kitchen, you know the classic triangle. Fast, cheap. Good pick two.
Yes.
You want it fast and good, it won't be cheap. You want it cheap and fast, it's going to be terrible. You simply cannot have all three. In the realm of investing, the triangle is high return, massive scale, enduring duration. You generally cannot have all three at the same time.
The project management analogy is actually a brilliant way to conceptualize the financial trade-offs. Let's break down exactly why these three financial properties conflict. First, if you want exceptionally high returns on capital, the business typically needs to be capital light. Think of a pure software company. It costs almost nothing to replicate a line of code, so the profit margins are staggering.
But being capital light inherently forecloses your ability to reinvest massive quantities of capital. You don't need $1 billion to build a new software factory.
Exactly.
So the very property that produces the spectacular return being capital light prevents you from achieving massive scale in your reinvestment. The cash just piles up and overflows.
Conversely, if you want heavy reinvestment, massive scale that requires a capital-intensive business model, think back to the railway, it can absorb billions of dollars easily. But that intense capital requirement crushes the overflow to owners. And because the assets are so expensive to build and maintain, it typically yields much lower incremental returns. Scale fights return.
Okay, but what about duration? Let's say you miraculously find a software company that figures out how to reinvest billions at high returns. Why can't you just hold that state forever?
Because, as we touched on earlier, high speed carries the shortest certainty. Capitalism is a fiercely competitive ecosystem designed to seek out and destroy high returns.
Right, the target on your back.
A giant target. If you are visibly reinvesting massive amounts of capital at astronomical rates, every competitor, every startup, every venture capital fund will attack your moat to get a piece of those returns. The duration is constantly under siege.
The flow that gives with one hand takes with the other. The perfect compounder is a myth, precisely because it demands maximizing mutually exclusive, conflicting properties simultaneously.
It requires a direction and rate of absorption that no real-world system can sustain indefinitely. Hmm. I mean, it demands a toll large enough to overflow, a wave cheap enough to fund without draining the system, a return high enough to matter, and a moat durable enough to hold off the entire global market for decades.
Yeah, that's a tall order.
The ingredients aren't independent variables you can just dial up. They're bound together in tension by the exact same capital flow that produces them.
We've covered a tremendous amount of ground today, dismantling the compounder cliche and looking at the real, brutal physics of the open system. So how should you actually apply this? The core takeaway from The Infinite Investor is a fundamental shift in the questions you ask when looking at a business.
Yes. Stop asking whether a business compounds. It isn't a binary label. Start asking in which direction its capital flows and how intensely it absorbs that capital.
Ask if reservoir A is actively absorbing reservoir B, if it's drifting into mechanical overflow, or if the flow has completely reversed into a dangerous wager.
Compounding is simply the mathematical consequence of absorption over time. An investor who truly grasps this stops looking for magic switches. They see the entire spectrum and they realize that searching for value is really just making a conscious choice among trade-offs that the physics of capital flow have already predetermined.
It is a radically different and frankly much more grounded paradigm for analyzing value. And before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final provocative thought.
Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive talking about financial capital, reservoirs, and corporate business models. But I want you to turn this analytical lens onto yourself. Think about your own intellectual capital, your skills, or the trajectory of your career.
Oh, applying the physics of an open system to individual human capital. That is a fascinating exercise.
Right. Ask yourself, are you operating as an open system right now? Are you actively absorbing new information, enduring the time and energy cost of learning, and converting that long-duration growth into a larger intellectual toll for your future?
Or have you exhausted your internal growth?
Exactly. Are you just overflowing what you already know, coasting on your existing knowledge base, experiencing the slow, mechanical compounding of a static skill set? Because just like a business, if you aren't actively absorbing the flow and organizing it, the second law of thermodynamics applies to you too. You are drifting toward that flat equilibrium of decay, something to mull over.
It's an inescapable reality. An open system must draw in order to hold off decay. It applies to us just as ruthlessly as it applies to financial capital.
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. Visit averagingup.com.